Laipni lūgts programma Viena balsi. Today we are very glad to receive Riards Zalupi. Thank you for coming. I know you are very busy recently. There is a lot of things going on. Flo, we are going to talk about this, but not only. The first thing I like to do when I enter the world of a composer is trying to take the people who listen the same path I've been experiencing. And it's June 2018. I go to the choir competition in Latvian University, and there is Juventus choir playing this track, and I'm totally blown away emotionally. So by Sautjens Veja, so Colds in the Wind.
Yeah.
And I would like to know more about, I have my ideas, but I would like to know more about this track, how you created it. And I think there is a story, there is a real story behind it. And a relative of yours made the text, maybe your wife or So yeah, that's a very interesting and piece of music.
Thank you. Well, I can't recall which year was it when I made it. But there is actually a pretty tragic story behind the music. But the story starts when Māris Sirmais called me and he asked me to write a piece for State Choir Latvia. And there was a project, I believe, in it was something about all the elements of the world: water, air, earth, fire, and so on. So I chose to write something about water, and I knew that my wife will write lyrics for this song, and so I started to do it already. And in the beginning of January, during the process where I was spending a lot of time to write this piece, there was one tragic event what happened, that one of our friends, he was blown into the sea with his kite surfing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and somehow there was, I believe, one of the biggest rescue operations in our history of Latvia. Mm-hmm. And basically a lot of volunteers went through the whole Rīgas Jūras Līcis search for him. We thought and we knew already that we will not find him, because it was really tough conditions to find somebody who could survive actually this type of conditions. But so we went to somewhere near to Mārsrax, and together with my wife, and it was like the beginning of January, like 3rd or 4th January. It was pretty warm. It was the same climate actually that this year. Yeah, so luckily we thought that maybe that's good for him, because the water was not so freezing. So it was around 7 degrees outside. And we went and we went to search for him, and in a way it was quite a tragic but so interesting experience that there was moonlight, and it was almost a full moon without clouds, or maybe with little clouds, and we were just going just on the seaside. And we know that there was some lights, like some kilometers before us and after us, and that we were not alone who were looking for him. But you know, in that kind of state, you recognize every tree or something on the seaside, like a body or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Paraidola. This is some cognitive phenomenon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because you can never know, and it's like interesting, like conscious state that everything looks a bit weird, because you know that in every moment you can actually see the dead or alive or maybe conscious or not conscious body. And so it was like interesting experience for us both, and And also looking with lights, you know, what is it? It's like a tree, or it's something, some wreck from ship, or what whatsoever. So, and also it was quite an evening. It was like around 11 p.m. So it's like, yeah, something like that. So, and so also the like the sounding atmosphere of waves and of birds or some any soundings what was surrounded us was quite tense, because you always somehow you have this kind of feeling that you need to listen, because maybe someone can call you help or something like this. Okay. You know, and also the waves. So unfortunately we didn't find him, and nobody find him. His name was Renars, and yeah, we went home, and after a few days he was found where everybody who lived in Kolka, in the city, they already knew that if someone drowned somewhere in the sea, that I mean the rescue team will find him in this exact location. And it happened the same, because the currents are going like there is some kind of scheme. But somehow I had this inner feeling that that I should put all my emotions in this piece about this story. And also Sander wrote lyrics about this. And the interesting thing was that I gave music to Maris, and I went to the first rehearsal, and there are a lot of echoes for solo singers, and it also comes from a technical aspect, from how I really like to create music is with delays and echoes.
Yeah,
and this is what I intended to do there, but somehow when this story came along, it represented totally new perspective for all the delays, because it was like somebody who is like searching to ask for help or something like that. And so I listened the piece first time, and I said to Marison for the whole choir singers, I said, hey guys, okay, I will tell you a story. And I told him this story, and everyone was just blown away. And so instantly this piece was like something totally different. And I remember that Maris told me that before every also in premiere, but after every concert, he really loves to talk a little bit about this story, because it gives another feeling for the audience to listen to it.
Yeah. But the magic of this is, I think, unconsciously I understood the story without knowing it and without knowing the lyrics.
Yeah.
Because there is this thing, that is, there are some symbolic element very strong there is this moment, approximately half of a track, when the male vocals get back. It's like some kind of wall of sound that takes over, like a wave. At the beginning, there are indeed these echoes. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine who is not really into choir music told me when I make him listen to it, but I want to give a delay pedal to it, to these poor girls on the... And the sound is specialized in a very interesting way. So is it sopranos or altos who started with they are on the side of it. Very striking element. And we can feel... that somebody is in some sort of quest of absolute, and is reaching a limit. And during the track, the sopranos keep going with these delays, and then it's like it's transformed in the sound of the calling of a mermaid.
Yeah. Who,
yeah.
You know the track pretty well. Thank you. I mean, that's really nice to hear. Yeah. Say, oh, not this way, oh. And when I just listen to this piece again and again, I cannot answer. And it's actually, in many occasions, I cannot answer how actually I get there. It's just the process of this kind of approach. Yeah. So.
I was talking about this wall of sound I hear at some point, mm-hmm. and so you are a percussionist essentially as mm-hmm. a first training.
Yeah.
But I believe that you're in your home studio. You may be surrounded by old keyboards because you. It's like the choir at some point is transformed into some kind of organ church. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell me if I'm wrong, but I think you have also a passion for sound textures.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I. Yeah, this is one of my most favorite in daily practice, to combine different timbres together and just to work with atmospheres and of course I love percussion. I really love rhythm and this world, let's call it like that. But somehow in the latest period, I have transformed my writing technique for like totally around than it was before, because these days normally if I want to create it doesn't matter like rhythmical pattern, maybe not so many times like rhythmical pattern, because then I play with my fingers or I do play with my mallets and with real instruments. But if I want to create something, some kind of lines or some kind of new elements, I basically sing everything right now with my voice.
Okay.
Yeah, and it has changed my writing approach so much in better way, I believe myself, that thing. So it's quite interesting how I just changed my musical perspective from percussion to voice and... Mm-hmm. And I really am so grateful and lucky for that, because it's you know, this is somehow I feel that this is my true inner voice, mm-hmm. not natural voice, but like inner voice, what comes out, and I did a lot of experience also in flow movie in the same approach, all the big string lines that basically are made with my voice, and then I just transpose it to real strings, and this is how I actually how I compose a lot of music these days and really enjoy that, and this is so great. I mean, I even can't describe because normally where I sit in my studio there are a lot of screens and pianos and mm-hmm. all the technical gear, but in front there's always microphone where I'm sitting, and I can just mm-hmm. switch record and just write everything what comes in my mind.
I could not agree more, because I as a musician, when I take the guitar, I enjoy this instrument, but I feel kind of limited because I want to follow something that depends on the instrument. But if I go spontaneously with a voice, I feel like I could record things and then write arrangements
yep.
in the background.
Yeah.
And this is very intuitive, connected to the body. I believe maybe Anna Fischer is composing like this. But now also you have some softwares that can transcribe directly the lines you are playing.
And we are still getting to there. I think the artificial intelligence will mm-hmm. create also crazy tools about it. But you know, I've also experienced, and I have created, really, I can say I have created in a way that's some beautiful themes, like, you know, the story about John Williams and the very famous Indiana Jones theme. You know, and he told the story that before the premiere of the first Indiana Jones movies, someone of his friends came to him and said, "Congratulations, John. I mean, you got again. I mean, your theme is like one of the best themes like Hollywood can provide these days. And you are so talented. And I mean, good for you." And then he tell that actually nobody knows that he created this theme during 3 days, like note by note. And so like just really like searching like for matching or sticking together music, you know. And I have created also some very beautiful themes like that. But this is like this is another approach. Like the first was what I was telling you, it was this flow situation where you just feel your instinct and you just go, and what comes out, this is like this what comes out. The other option is when you really like mathematically or formal way.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad thing. I mean, this is a totally different approach, right?
Mm-hmm. But there is something quite remarkable is that you created a native instrument that reproduces the sound of Peter's Vask strings. But to enable people to understand, this is a virtual instrument.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I meant.
This is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Virtual instrument. Like, well, I mean, everybody who works on digital platform has some kind of virtual instrument. Mm-hmm. And all the DAWs are actually coming already with some digital instruments, at least like simple piano or something like that. And for a film composer these days, but I believe it has been already for decades, it could be always very important to show to director or to show to producers, let's say, the final product of music you are working on. And it's because of the budgeting, it just to have like real orchestra recording in Hollywood, it costs a lot of money. And nobody wants just to experience situation where all the recording process is started and everyone in the back room understands that it will not fit together with the scene. So back in 1970s, you know, there's also I will quote John Williams because I mean he is one of the great examples of film creating, and there is a video of YouTube how he is demonstrating to Spielberg, I believe it was an AT movie, that there was a small screen and they were looking live movie and he was just playing piano score. He was telling like Steven, there will be like this one happen. I mean, there will be strings and this is for choir and so, and then, you know, and this was the technique what they use. And basically also the recording process is so interesting back in the days that they didn't have like tempo tracks, so metronome tracks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they also were synchronizing music to the picture. Otherwise, it's huge pressure for conductor. Mostly all the conductors were composers who were not as good like conductors as composers. And so how to match everything to picture? Because sometimes when you conduct the orchestra, it's like staying a bit behind you, you know, and it's hard to move them. And so what they did this, they made these tempo tracks, but in picture. So they put like black marks. So when the composer sees or everyone sees the movie, there's like movie going, rolling, and there's just black marks. So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 1, 2, tick, 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 something like that. So they created such a technique. So you can imagine so how much work for somebody to cut everything black these cuts incredible. Inside. Okay. It was incredible. I mean, there was no printers. There were copyists, for instance. I mean, there you have like 100-piece orchestra with choir. Everyone has their score. And so you record and you think, okay, I mean, I just want to change something. Then you give, in that's the same moment, you give score to the, let's say, orchestrator who orchestrates. Then in other room, there are 100 copyists who are writing new scores for the orchestra. And then they give, you know, to the real orchestra. These days, the technique is that there is some developers who have created software that and everyone has like iPads, so you have digital score and you can just write somewhere in your conductor's score, for instance, for the first flute and for the second violas, and already they will have this instant momentum where they will see some changes, you know. But this is today, this technique, right? So, and that's why also in these days it's very important, because all the limitings of time schedules and also the budget things, it becomes more a bit frustrating, but difficult to work in this field, because it's really like a lot of pressure. And that's why it's good that we have all these digital sound packs or digital instruments, where, for instance, we can hear not digitally made instruments, but real recorded instruments. So, but the difference is that what many people don't understand, they think, okay, the digital instrument, digital library is like flute has played like some kind of melody, and you take this audio file like a song and you put it in your score. No, this is not the technology. Technology is that, for instance, there is a one player, flute player, who has recorded all scale what he can do with one instrument in all the dynamic ranges, all effects, maybe glissandos and so on. And so when I in my studio have this digital library, I press, let's say, one button, like as soft or as loud I want, and so directly it responds in the same loudness as a real player has recorded.
To explain to the audience, it's what we used to call the velocity into MIDI format. Yeah, so it's also the volume, but it's also the attack.
Yeah, exactly.
Sound.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's real instrument. It's not made from some kind of synthesizer or some kind of. And so it was interesting experience that I met these two great guys from Orchestral Tools in Tallinn, in a film festival there. And somehow we were sitting together on one chair with Arvo Pärt's son, Michael Pärt. He introduced me with these two gentlemen, and somehow they talked something about Pēteris Vasks. It could be really great to find somebody who knows Pēteris Vasks personally. I said, well, guys, I know him personally. Well, yeah, you know, okay. And so this is how our collaboration started. And as an end result, it's Pēteris Vasks string library. I believe one of the greatest string libraries ever you can have these days. And it was recorded in Riga, in St. John's Church, by Sinfonietta Riga, conducted by Normund Schnee. And it was like full production and full budget project. And it's so great. I mean, like daily I work with this string library. I really like the color of it. Mm-hmm. It's not very huge as Spitfire Audio, like London Symphonic Orchestra libraries. It's more intimate, but I somehow really like it. And you know, and I never imagined that this kind of situation can happen, that I created score for Flow with Pēteris Vasks string library. And then when we re-recorded the real score, the same people with the same instruments actually recorded the score, and we blended these two scores together, and it was perfect match, like the best match what you actually can get. So I really feel so happy about that we achieved that. And also, I know that Pēteris Vasks library for Orchestral Tools is one of the best-selling libraries in the history. And it's so great also to our film music community to show Pēteris Vasks music. And so, yeah, so basically what they did, they took one music piece from Pēteris, the voices for string orchestra, I believe the first and the second part. And so they search for some very unique techniques, how Pēteris writes for strings. So there are some very regular articulations for strings, like legato, like staccato and so on. And there are these special articulations, what is created from Pēteris Vasks' influence. So. who is really trying out the field of digital instruments, I really recommend to go to their website, to Orchestral Tools, and just to search out. They made like a digital instrument library. It's called Tallinn. And also Salu, what they recorded in Estonia. There are so interesting elements. I mean, at Daily, I'm just... I'm the guy who... I don't really like to work with templates. So template, it means that... I know that a lot of composers really like it. So it means that, for instance, if I have a new film, I open my project where I'm doing all this musical, I mean, where I write music, and I could have like my template with all the orchestras, with all my favorite strings, favorite synthesizers, and so on. I never do like that, because somehow I really enjoy this searching moment, and I think it's so crucial, because I don't want to sound the same for the next project. Yeah, so just go and check out and the latest also for percussion, world percussion. It's amazing. I mean, for me as a percussionist, just listen to the real drums, how they sound. And I could never record in such a good quality, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's and so there we are. A lot of musicians think that it's bad, you know. And also, we had discussion also with Petris about what it is. And I was really trying to put my effort to explain him what it is. But, you know, the situation, how I always look at this string, about all these libraries, is that there are certain budget for every film. And it's impossible. I mean, it's just impossible for me as a composer to ask the producer, hey, we need to have higher budget for music. It will never happen. Maybe in very few I think it will never happen, because the budget is settled. This goes to sound, this goes to music, that's it. So I have two options. The first option is to make some kind of crap score where everything will sound bad. The other, what I really enjoy, is to make as best sounding score I can. Although there are a lot of virtual instruments, but somehow to talk with producers, mainly maybe in Latvia or maybe in Baltic states, to show them this is where we could get with very good digital instruments, but can you imagine what could be with real orchestra? Because the real emotions then kick in, and this is another story. Mm-hmm. And so somehow my this kind of approach has shown that it has changed, because also in Latvia, a lot of producers and directors are really appreciating the possibility to have a real orchestra recording. And even like 10 years ago, it was nobody thought about it, because they think, why we should? There are synthesizers. But many films I have created with real scores, not only in Latvia, but I mean, this is the real art form, because... when you create a story where the musicians know a bit of this story, and as me as a conductor, I gave them this story, then the real emotions and the real arts, where music combines together with film, is happening. And so without these digital instruments, it couldn't be done. It's just these days, this is where we are. So I believe this is one of the first Latvian, I think, digital library.
This is some sort of national tribute, because
people
who don't know, Peter Izvask is some kind of spiritual father for a lot of musicians.
Yeah.
I think it must have been maybe difficult, because his strings, in my opinion, they can sound white but not cold.
Yeah.
This is a kind of texture that is not easy to match, and that is really typical. And we understand that you have a lot of experience in writing music for movies and scores. Where do you start? Do you need some kind of first intentions? Do you need the pictures or some extracts?
It depends on the project.
It depends.
Yeah. there are situations where I got like we call it picture lock. Yeah, when the picture is like edited and locked, so it means that there will be maybe some effects or some colorings, but the actual cut, the editing or the actual cut will not happen again. So, but sometimes, yeah, director just call me and talks about the story, and I have some kind of impression. I wrote some music and I give to the director to maybe for him to help a bit. And the most, I think, crucial point is if the story really interests me. And sometimes it doesn't, but I live here in Latvia and I need to live, so I need to make money. And this is what we should consider and
put bread on the table.
Yeah, exactly.
But with Straume Flow by Genzi Balodis, I suppose you were very involved and it was a pleasure.
Yeah, definitely.
Gins used to make his first movie, Away, by himself, everything, the music.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It took him, I think, 4 years, he explained. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he shows on Instagram and social networks that he creates some tracks. Sometimes they are 200 layers. So how did you work with him? He had some pieces already done. You transcribed. You make additional arrangement. Can you and I think also you directed the recording, the orchestra.
Yeah.
So
Well, this was actually a pretty unique experience for me. First of all, because the director is a composer. I think for a lot of composers, it could be a dream job that there is no dialogues and the music has such an important role in the whole movie. Of course, it also gives you a huge responsibility. But the thing was that when I got the picture, the Gins was already created all the sketches for all the scenes. So I already knew that we will have at least 40 minutes of music. I already told to Matis and to Gins that in my experience, we will have at least about 1 hour of music, because normally for feature it takes around 1 hour.
And then you cut inside of it and you keep the best, maybe.
No, that's the final length of the score. So our final length is about around 56-57 minutes. Ginsk has created around 7 hours of music
for Flow.
Oh wow.
So normally for feature, for me, it takes around, well, it depends, but around 2.5-3 hours of music. But it's not that I create 3 hours of music and then I choose which are the best. But for instance, you created something for a scene and it doesn't match the criteria or something. It's not working there. So you create another version. And then if that matches, then you create next version updated where something you have changed. So in that way, the timing prolongs a long way ahead. So, but Gins has created all the sketches for all the scenes where he thought the music should be. Personally, I was very surprised what I heard, because the first impression for me was that I will hear something like from Away, some very transparent material, you know, something very slow and meditative. But no, this was not this situation. So there was a lot of minimalistic percussion sequences repeating all the time, and also he really making dynamics, layering the instruments, not making something new, but just layering. For instance, one pattern. And then he got like a bit stronger, and then like waves, you know, and then he take them away and just leave one element. But basically it was, mixing some instrument layers. And I saw it first time. Also, he had particularly one slow theme, what we also called like wave theme or fear theme, which also sounds in the climax of the film, like fully, you know, with strings. But when I heard it, I instantly somehow I had this feeling that I don't need to create a lot of rhythmical music there. I need to dive in this meditational, transparent, transcendental world, what he has created in Away Movie. Because somehow I felt that this musical language is really what really helps to tell the story. And so we didn't have any fight for that, because Gint has his own percussive elements and I put all this other world together. Of course, I did also a lot of percussion grooves and so on, and did a lot of editing, instrumentation, and I wrote like extra 15 minutes of like music for strings. And the most interesting fact was that I remember that in the beginning they thought that because it's a small budget movie, that we will have some small ensemble with real instruments.
To give an idea, it's the total budget is $3 million and Toy Story is $200 million.
Yeah.
So, and it's, yeah, well, this is how it costs, you know. I mean, this is, yeah, in United States. So they told me that maybe there will be some small ensemble or something like that. But after, I don't know, 25 minutes of music, from beginning, I understood that I have used all the Basque's library and a lot of strings, and that we need to have real strings and explain them. Of course, it sounds great already, because for like the Gint sketches, everything was totally like with synthesizers. There was also some maybe artificial marimbas and so on, but and I said, guys, I mean, if you wanna reach some really good score and good quality, because I mean the movie, I mean the sound is, the score is so important for the movie. I mean it could be really bad to hear that, you can hear that it's not recorded live because there are no dialogues at all. And so luckily Mattis found the budget for it, and we recorded the large string ensemble with 35 people, and we tripled it. So that's why we have this screenshot from my computer, actually, where we have 380 stereo tracks. Not all of them were stereo tracks, but so the final length of the tracks, what our sound mixer from Finland, Mikko Raita, sent me, was 580 something mono tracks only for score, what he mixed. Yeah. So it's a lot. Not for my project. I mean, The Pagan King was around something like that, or even more. Like I believe it was 700 tracks, because it was 120 people recording for orchestra and choir and so on. Yeah, and so this is how we started to work, and everything went so well, because Gint's, and I mean, he already knew what exactly he wanted. This is so great plus for a director who knows also how music works, and he could he also edited his movie on music, that it's not like temp music, like we called it, we have this name temp music, like it's temporarily music, what then composer should write something new based on this track. What's really don't like to do. You put some kind of Hans Zimmer score and then ask to another composer, hey, I want to have something like that. This is
okay. Yeah.
But it happens all the time. You
doesn't
know?
Sound very ambitious, but
yeah, but it's what I mean. This
that's for cheese.
Yeah, but this is how the industry works, because the sound editors should have some music to edit, and yeah. We recorded all the strings, then I had my own percussion string library, not string, but percussion library at my studio, mm-hmm. where I experimented a lot with different type of instruments, because for instance, I found for Lemur the gamelan instrument, which is Indonesian based percussion instrument, and it has very unique like vibraphone bell sound. Bit untuned sound. So of course I don't think that anybody has in Latvia that type of instrument, so I needed to search the way how I can just clone it to avoid just that I have played with the digital sound library. So I just bought very small children a glockenspiel, like bells, mm-hmm. I recorded everything and I tuned them one octave lower, and I put some reverb and a huge huge reverb and also a delay, and it really sounds like gamelan, you know. And of course you can also make a bit tuning off, you know. So and this is I really went crazy in this project in that direction, and also with marimbas, and I mean yeah, I can just this was also a huge part of that, and yeah, there we are. I mean, enjoying every step of this amazing process and success of the movie. Yeah.
Maybe we'll have an Oscar.
We are hoping for that.
Yeah. Already, how many awards? When?
Well, I don't know.
70, 80, maybe. Yeah.
Something around that. Something. Yeah. It's crazy. Anyway.
I think the best outcome. What it is from this project is that for all young generation, not only filmmakers but everyone who mm-hmm. who has big dreams, you know, that these days it really doesn't matter where do you live. If you are passionate in what you are doing, if you are willing to do something what you really love, you can achieve like everything what you can imagine. I mean, because for such a small film with such a small industry to win like Golden Globes, to have two nominations in Oscars, two nominations in BAFTA, I mean, it's you know, it's great, and I think already I have seen some young generation, they are so enthusiastic. I can see the sparks in their eyes, because if Gins can, then also they can, you know. Mm. And this is the best what actually we can do for Latvian society.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I definitely agree that this is the spirit of this project. This is not, the music in Latvia is not folk music. It's it's music, and it can speak to everybody potentially because of history, because of a lot of things. And well, Gins seems to be a very special person. I think he said that the flow was one of his primal fear. So
yeah.
That we are really speaking about art at its best, like to overcome things. And he says also that there are things he cannot explain, why he make this scene this way. Mm. And if he could explain, then he didn't make the movie. And
that's true.
I think very important thing what I really would say is that as a composer, this is one of the best places I could live, to have this crazy opportunity in a good way to work and to create such a huge spectrum of music, which is played by the best choirs, best orchestras in the world. And basically, I mean, you cannot imagine that somebody could achieve something like this at the age of 40 living in Los Angeles. It could be, I mean, there are so few, but honestly, I mean, it's hard to get, like, in terms, like, in Latvian National Symphony Orchestra to perform your symphony at the age of 30. For someone who lives in the United States, it's just, it's even really impossible. Mm-hmm. So we really should appreciate what we have here, because the culture, what we have here, all the people, the musicians, all the art, I think it's so great. And sometimes we just don't appreciate what we have. And it starts from every person in Latvia up to the government and so on. But in that way, it's so great to live here that we can just follow our dreams as a composers, as a musicians.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't be able to interview John Williams in United States, but yeah. I can interview you. I can interview Petr Zvask. You mentioned him. You mentioned him earlier, but who do you consider as being influential for you, who inspire you as musicians? It can be in rock music, and it can be in contemporary.
Okay, let's start from classical composers, because most of my life I have spent in this area. My top two favorite composers, I think it could be Rachmaninov and Shostakovich. The first CD album what I saw in my life was, what was the name of the German band? Scooter. There was a band, Scooter. I believe they are still today, but it's like, I heard this CD, very good audio setup, and I was just blown away of the sound quality of, and somehow, yeah, all trance and techno, it really like blown my mind at that time. The other thing was, I remember it was in the same time that I got the first cassette with Backstreet Boys, and it really blew my mind. Something with, I mean, I don't know, maybe because I was young and in teenage period, it was something, well, it could be interesting that I could just tell somebody that I really enjoy Backstreet Boys, but it really, the first album, there was something so, interestingly, it was something so familiar to my soul, let's put that way. It was so interesting that after a long period of time, I realized that all songs basically was created not by them, but by the Finnish producer. Dire Straits also was one of my favorite rock ensembles. For instance, Money for Nothing, because the tune for guitar was so great. And I believe from film music, the first thing what comes to my mind is Gladiator, for sure, because when I heard this score, somehow I thought that, I mean, it really somehow connected with my true nature, I believe, and I started to think, if this is what's like music from score sound, that I was starting to believe that I really, maybe I also would like to write something for films. And the second, of course, everything what John Williams has created is really beautiful, I like. But interesting is that the second score could be John Debney's score for Crucifixion of Christ. These are, I think, two most influenced scores for me, how I approach the film music. Because everyone who is maybe seeing this, they should understand that in 90s, we didn't have a lot of music, actually, from outside Soviet Union, you know? Because the Backstreet Boys, maybe, and the Scooter was the first music what we get outside our country. So we didn't have this kind of background of so much of, I mean, of course I like Beatles and Rolling Stones, some, but this is not, I mean, my parents just maybe listen it somewhere, I don't know where, in silent places, you know. So it was not easy. So it's maybe interesting examples. Yeah.
Jelgava 94, the book and the movie give some kind of testimony and story about how it was and how it was difficult and
to listen.
Was not transparent, and the transition of the 90s was not really easy on many aspects.
Yeah.
I have one last question for all the guests. What is your first memory in your childhood connected to sound or music?
I believe it's connected with the music school of Talsi, where I... But no, actually, it could be connected, but my first thing as a performer, actually, is where I was singing as a small child. Not as a percussionist or playing in national competition with xylophone, but there's a one hill, particular hill in Talsi where I was born, where there are some sort of statues around it. It's like a statue garden or something like that. And there was some kind of festival, and I remember myself standing there with microphone and singing something. I can't recall what I was singing, but yeah, this is my first. So you see how interesting that, how this loop actually comes back to me after 40 years that I sing every day mostly, and I really enjoy it. Yeah. So,
Richard, thank you very much for being with us. Let's hope for the best in your career, for Flow, and. If you enjoy watching this program, please follow us on social networks, subscribe, it's the best way to help this channel, and we hope to see you here very soon.